We're doing our class on the Jewish home. We left off last week with gun control, right? We discussed the advice they give you about guns in the United States. So they tell you that if you own a weapon, then you shouldn't threaten with a weapon. You never threaten with a weapon. You only pull out a weapon when you're ready to shoot. You don't pull out a weapon and say, stop or I'm going to shoot. No, you shoot. If you need to shoot, you shoot. And if you don't need to shoot, don't pull out the weapon. Why? Because it's happened that people have pulled out weapons and threatened an intruder, and the intruder was smart enough to overpower them and use the weapon against them. And this has happened so many times that the advice that they give is you don't threaten with a gun. A gun is meant to be used or not, but not to threaten with. This has happened many times. You could imagine someone holding a gun and the intruder, who knows his weapons a little bit better, sees that they didn't cock the gun, the security, the safety latch is still on. He knows he can approach, right? It takes you a second to take the safety latch off and cock the gun. So the man or woman is standing there saying, I'm going to shoot, I'm going to shoot. And the intruder knows there's no bullet there and the safety latch is on. Yeah, right, you're going to shoot, right? Okay, I'm going to shoot. Okay, fine. If he's smart and he can see what's going on. Okay, so there's a rule. You don't threaten with a weapon. A gun is meant to shoot or not, but not to threaten with. The same is true with the word divorce. The word divorce doesn't belong in a marriage. And it's not something to be used as a threat or something we're considering. Or, do you mean to say we should get divorced? No, we don't say that. That's a word that doesn't belong in a marriage that should never be mentioned in a marriage. Even if a person is thinking, this is terrible, we better get divorced, they shouldn't say it. Because we've seen many couples where one of them mentioned it and then there was no turning back. Once you pull out that weapon in the house, you never know where it'll take you. And so it's something that should never be used. Even if a person really thinks that's what should happen, let them go to their rabbi and discuss it. Let them go to their rabbanut and discuss it. Let them figure something out. But the threat is taking out a weapon which you do not have the control to return. So years ago, there was a couple, they had already married off children and they were already grandparents, they had grandchildren. And at one point in an argument, the husband insinuated that maybe they're done. And he didn't really mean it. And the wife spent 4 years festering. She couldn't believe after everything they'd done together, he could say such a line. And as those 4 years evolved, she became more and more nasty and he couldn't figure out how to undo it. Anything he said, he couldn't undo it. And after 4 or 5 years, the marriage exploded. They were already grandparents. They had gone through so much of life together. But he had pulled out that weapon and now he couldn't put it back. There was a woman who always wanted more attention. And so she'd always say, you know, I think you're going to divorce me. This is a story I've seen more than once, unfortunately. I know a couple where she told him, you know, I keep having these dreams, you're going to divorce me. Why'd she tell him that? She wanted him to reassure her, to keep saying, no, I'm never going to divorce you. Well, eventually she convinced him, he divorced her. I've seen this again so many times. This is such a common mistake people make. You never use the word divorce in a house. It's not something to threaten with. It's not something to joke about. It's not something to talk about. It's like a revolver. When you're ready to shoot, you pull it out and shoot. And you should never be ready to shoot. You work on it, you make it work. There are communities that don't prepare chatanim. They give them one class before the wedding and that's it. So they give them a few classes in the laws, but when it comes to the idea of how to build a relationship, they give them one shot, one class. So that class better be worthwhile. In that class, one of the main points they say is this idea. You never discuss divorce. Now, this is an idea that that has a few applications. Let's take one broader application. Imagine a child that's not doing so well in school. So the parent tells him, I do well on the test, so Abba and Ima will love you. What happens in the child's mind is the child starts thinking subconsciously. He says to himself, and if I don't do well, they won't love me? No, they must love me. And then he has this internal inclination to not do well, to prove to himself that even if I don't do well, they're still going to love me. So there's a mistake that people sometimes make. They make their love contingent. They tell a child that they should do something so that the parent will love them, and it actually causes the exact opposite effect. There's this inner need to prove to oneself, they love me even if I won't do it. Well, the same is true with this. A person can't make his love contingent on anything. Your wife will ask you, why do you love me? And your answer should be, there are so many reasons. How can I pinpoint it on one thing? You're a whole person and I love every part of you. So what do you mean, why do I love you? Is it because of this, that, or the other thing? It's because of everything that you mean. It's because of everything that you are. The most painful thing to a spouse, to a wife, to a husband, is this idea of divorce. What divorce means is, I want to have nothing to do with you. I'm willing to finish everything we've done together. And when we threaten with that, we run the risk that the other side will say, "How you're willing to threaten me with that? So then how could I continue with you?" If we're on the receiving end, by the way, then we have to be man enough to overcome it and not let this happen. Or to our women listeners, you have to be woman enough to overcome it and not let this happen to you. I'm warning what you shouldn't do, but if, God forbid, a person's on the receiving end, then a person has to overcome it, just like we learned in the Chazon Ish earlier tonight. A person should be careful not to joke about divorce either. This is the one time when I think that people should react harshly. If one spouse makes a joke, a comment about divorce, so then I think a person should respond and say, please don't even joke about such a thing. I can't imagine such a thing. I can't even hear you say such a thing. When a person reacts harshly, what he's really saying is, you're so precious to me, I don't even want to joke about the idea of possibly losing you. So this is the one time when it is a good idea to react harshly. What we're trying to get across as husband and wife is that you are a part of me. I can't imagine life without you. This is something that doesn't happen overnight. You'll be married a year and 5 years and maybe even 10 years, and you might not feel that way yet. It's interesting how we build a house, we build a family, and as much as we share, it takes a long time till you really sense like the other person is a part of you. Rav Aryeh Levine came to the doctor and he said, my wife's leg is hurting us. Now, it wasn't a joke. His wife's leg was hurting them. But I don't know if he felt that way when he was married a year or two or ten. Over time, we fused together. It doesn't happen overnight. And to fake it, well, we should fake other things. We should be realistic and work on developing positive relationships and expressing positive feelings. Yes?
What if the opposite is true? Like, I haven't been married, but personally, I'm someone who gets like very excited in the beginning of things. Like, I start a new book and like, oh, this is a great book, and then halfway through the book, I just get less interested.
Right. So, in general, that happens in every marriage. That's called the disenchantment stage. Couples get engaged, they're excited, they get married, it's wonderful. And then after a year or two or three, somewhere by the 3-4 year mark, there's a disenchantment stage where you say, wait a second, all of that was great, but now there's real life. And suddenly all the other stuff is coming to the surface and all the good stuff, well, okay, I'm used to that. And then a person takes a step back and says, what did I get myself into? There's a not nice joke about a guy who's celebrating his 25th year of marriage. You guys know this? So his friend comes and says, congratulations, you're married 25 years. And he So Bob comes to Jim and says, Jim, congratulations, 25 years. And Jim says, I know. And Bob goes, what are you all upset about? Jim says, you remember our conversation 21 years ago? So Bob says, no. Jim says, let me remind you. 21 years ago, I told you, I'm fed up with this. I'm ready to kill her. And you said to me, don't, you'll sit in prison for 20 years. Well, you know what? Today I would have been out. That's a terrible joke. But there's definitely a feeling after a person passes a certain mark. It could be 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. A person reaches a point where they feel not only fed up, it's like, what am I doing here? This person has so many issues. We neglect to notice how many issues we have. All you notice is the other person. So everyone's like that. And the question is only when it happens. That's why our first class discussed the idea that we're in it for life. A person has to make the decision, I'm in it for life. It's not a question of will this work, but how will this work? Once we make that shift, so then we can be prepared for the cycles of marriage. And marriage has ups and downs and ups and downs. It's cyclical. And it can be ups and downs for hours, minutes, days, weeks, months, years. There can be years of downs and then years of ups. That's part of the cycle of marriage. Sometimes couples deal with tremendous hardships. It can be a hardship, a financial hardship. It can be a medical hardship. And those hardships constrain the relationship. And it can be a neighbor that's driving them up the wall. At the end of the day, relationships have ups and downs. Sometimes it's the job a person has. It's the coworker that causes them to be very antsy when they come home. There can be a million external or internal stimuli that cause us to have ups and downs. And that's part of marriage. Just like in life, we have ups and downs. A person has to be prepared for that and register the idea that we're in it for the long haul.
Is that with the role of celebrating? I mean, like to keep it fresh, you know? Or is there...
Chazal do say that the laws of family purity help us rejuvenate the marriage. That man, the male species, have a tendency to get tired of the same wife. That's a weakness that us men have.
So Sephardim can have many wives.
So this is one aspect of benefit. Yeah. This is one aspect of benefit to the laws of family purity. Yeah. Tov.